LSU fans know better than anybody, there's no place like home. Whether it's Tiger Stadium or Tiger Park, the PMAC or Alec Box. When we're at home, we win. The spread of COVID-19 will keep us from going to games for now, but we still have to work together to defeat this virus. Do your part by staying home. Whether you're sick or healthy, staying home is critical in the fight against the coronavirus. Remember, staying home saves lives.
Hey everyone, Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Athletics here. Today's podcast, of course, is a little bit different. The world has changed since last we talked, and it's going to change a little bit of what I'm doing going forward. Hopefully not too much, because one, I want to make sure that we're using this platform to keep you informed, but also entertain, engage, connected with LSU Athletics. So I'm going to spend the next few weeks trying to strike that balance. Hopefully I'll do that okay. If I don't, please bear with me as I try to figure it out, because as you can relate to, the changes worldwide as we've gone on to this battle with the coronavirus, and we're kind of all in this together. It's changed everything, and I want to make sure that I'm using my platform in the right ways, and it's going to take me maybe a little bit of trial and error to figure that out exactly. But I figured this first episode back, the best thing to do would be to lean on the expertise that we have in-house here at LSU to keep you informed and engaged, knowing what LSU is doing to protect its student-athletes and its staff. And I think also in this conversation with Shelley Mullenix, who's LSU's Associate Athletic Director for Health and Wellness, I think you'll learn some things that you can apply to your life, and maybe some tips that you can kind of stick to, and some principles that you can try to stick to over the next few weeks as we continue this battle. And it's not going to be an overnight thing where things are back to normal. It's not going to be a snap of the fingers. It's going to be a long haul, as me and Shelley talk about in this episode. But it's a long haul that we can get through together in whatever ways we can. So obviously sports become secondary at times like this. And I want to make sure that I keep that perspective in whatever I'm doing. But at the same time, I do think that as there are no games being played, and we're kind of in limbo with the future of collegiate athletics for now, I want to make sure that I do keep you entertained, engaged, and informed in every way that I can, because at some point, college sports will be back, and I'm really looking forward to that day for many reasons. But until then, I want to make sure that we're using this platform, this podcast, all the stuff that I write to try to keep you not just knowledgeable of what's going on in the world and leaning on experts like Shelley, but also, you know, trying to catch up with some of the student athletes that have played at LSU or that are coming back to LSU, and kind of check in with them, see how they're doing, and just talk sports at some point too, because we all need a release from everything that's going on at some point. I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to clear our minds and get back to some of the things that we enjoy and try to retain as much normalcy as possible. So we'll try to do that as much as we can moving forward. But for today, this is a conversation with Shelley Mullenix. She is she's on the front lines of this fight with in terms of how it applies to LSU athletics. She's extremely knowledgeable, both from a scientific perspective and a medical perspective, but also a mental health perspective. She's extremely well-rounded. She's one of the unsung heroes of what LSU does on a daily basis throughout the year, and certainly at this time and this sort of unusual circumstance that we find ourselves in. Shelley's just a huge piece of what LSU's doing. Her background is in athletic training, but she's sort of crafted herself and studied and gone back to school to get her master's degree, so that she's not only well versed in the athletics side of things and the athletic training side, and you know, the things that LSU is trying to do with its students in terms of remote athletic training, remote strength and conditioning, all those sorts of things. But she's also very in lockstep in terms of the administrative decisions. She's also in lockstep in terms of the mental health things that LSU is going to be monitoring as well. So it's a really good conversation. I learned a lot from it. I've learned a lot from the things that Shelley's been putting out internally over the last week or so. She's been sending out newsletters. You'll hear us reference that in the conversation. They're full of just tips and pointers and information. And she's really good about relying on the science right now and finding out where the facts are and communicating those facts to everybody and trying to stay on top of this ever-changing world that we're in right now, because it is ever-changing. One last thing that I forgot to mention in this introduction. Of course, I'm working from home, working remotely, as most of us are right now that can. You're going to hear my two-year-old daughter in the background of some of the conversation with Shelly. She was in the other room. She was extremely well-behaved the whole time. I was just so proud of her. But a couple of times, she wanted her daddy to come fix the iPad or whatever I'd put in her hands at that point to distract her for about 25 minutes. So you'll hear that. Forgive me for that. We're all doing the best that we can. There's also maybe not the sound quality that you're used to on this podcast. I think you can understand that as well. So just bear with us on all those things as we figure out how to continue to work in unusual circumstances. I'm sure you can relate to that as much as I can. So with all that said, here is my conversation with Senior Associate Athletic Director for Health and Wellness, Shelly Mullins. All right, now it's time to catch up with Senior Associate Athletic Director of Health and Wellness, Shelly Mullins. Shelly, since last we spoke on the podcast, at least, a lot has happened, and particularly in the last week or so, a lot has happened. And I think at this time, you know, we're all kind of quarantined in our homes, self-quarantined in our homes. I'm sitting here at my kitchen table recording. Looks like you're in an office. Maybe my two-year-old is literally right next to us. So if this gets interrupted, it's totally her fault. She's on the iPad right now, but hopefully that'll occupy her. But obviously, the last week has been crazy for everybody. For regardless of what industry you're working in, for you, this is, you know, one of the things that I'm very appreciative of right now with LSU is we have so many people in our athletic department and so many different people who have different areas of expertise, and this sort of falls into your area of expertise in the health and wellness and some of the things that you're doing, and you're certainly very busy the last few days. So I think I'll start there. Kind of walk us through the last week for you, 2 weeks for you. It may even go back further than that, because I would imagine that this is something you've been thinking about for a while. Just kind of take us back through your personal journey and professional journey with this coronavirus and how it's changed your life and how you've sort of worked around it.
Yep. Well, certainly it's kind of changed all of our lives. Looking out in the parking lot, there's not a car out there. So everyone's at least heeding all the warnings and recommendations. So that's good. I would say that we had a little bit of a jump on our response because of the mumps outbreak that we were having on campus. So the mumps outbreak allowed us to get a lot of things in order as it relates to reasons for isolation, reasons to not isolate, vaccinations, kind of, you know, getting everyone up to speed on the concerns with, you know, things that are not directly related to COVID, but, you know, that have similarities and that they're transmittable, you know, diseases and viruses. So it had been spinning in our heads, I think, for a while beforehand. And I think that's good. That really goes back to the Arkansas game this football season. So that's kind of when we first started hearing about cases of the mumps. So we had been writing policies. We had been implementing programs to kind of get ahead of that curve. And this was going on essentially in the background, the COVID stuff. And I do, you know, watch enough and read enough to know that what I, you know, thought, I think what a lot of us thought we were seeing was something that would eventually, you know, get our way. But I think we were probably, a lot of us were stuck in that belief that maybe it's like SARS and MERS, where it can be contained within this one region and it would not get out. But we're so focused, you know, globally now that it'd be hard to really, I think, contain a lot of these viruses that way. So, you know, I think in talking with people at the Student Health Center and people that are on the COVID task force that both Dan Gaston and I have been sitting on, in some ways we were ahead. You know, you know, in no ways prepared for, you know, the difficulty in managing the loss of competition for every athlete.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot more than what we ever would have anticipated. But we did have some of that infrastructure kind of in place. Our mindsets were already kind of there. But yeah, in the last, it's literally been, I think, a week and a couple days, judging even by those newsletters and those dates on the newsletters I've been sending out. It's amazing what has happened in just such a short period of time within the world of college athletics and the world of higher education and K through 12. It's just incredible. And everyone's going through it really the same way, I think.
Yeah, the speed of it has been unbelievable. Just sort of the exponential escalation of how it's affected all of our lives. With that in mind, in the work that you're doing, how have you tried to stay on top of it? How have you tried to manage just that speed of how quickly it's escalated?
Yeah, well, I love, as an athletic trainer, we like crisis. We prefer not to have it, but we're well equipped for crisis management. That's our skill set. And we're allied medical health professionals. And so it was great timing on on Scott's part to hire me. And I think in this area, we just have been moving at lightning speed, trying to, on our end, maintain everyone's health and safety. That's been our focus. That's really been the focus from the top down with everybody. Yeah. Everyone's got subcommittees that have, you know, worked off of that goal. But, you know, making sure that we can get kids home safely, making sure that we can feed the ones that are here, how are we managing those international student athletes? How are we safely getting student athletes that were back, that were on the road, literally, you know, in the blocks ready to run?
Yeah.
How do we get all those people back? How do we get our staff who are overseas recruiting back in a safe way? These are all things that were literally going through my office and you know, really every office up here in the admin building. It's been a pretty profound effort on everyone's part, from our travel group to compliance to the medical people. What our focuses were, at least in the initial few days, the staff is, you know, staff is huge. You've got a performance dining staff that, you know, we have probably about 50, a little bit more than 50 people there. We've got the entire coaching staff. We've got all the athletic training staff, all the support staff. Every one of those people needs to be juggled in such a way that we were going to keep them safe and doing their job until kind of the next phase would come. I mean, I feel like we've been working in these phases. The phases have literally come so quickly that, you know, I'm paralyzed sometimes by wanting to write a newsletter, because I know that within 3 hours of me sending it out, you know, a rule will change, the stat will change, and you feel like you're being insufficient in the job you're doing. And so I think, you know, in talking to even some of the NCAA, listening on some of those NCAA phone calls, like, they all feeling the same thing. They're all feeling this, you know, this concern that they're going to get the data out wrong because it's changing so rapidly. And so, you know, we're just trying to kind of, you know, manage the data as it comes in, ask for everyone's patience and understanding, from the coaches to the student athletes, and, you know, and just kind of work through it. I mean, there's just been a tremendous amount of support, I think, from the athletic administration and all the people that have to be moving at high speeds right now to be able to get the athletes home safe. That's really been our number one concern.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about what you're kind of hearing is the latest information, but as you were talking, I realized that it's changing so fast that by the time someone's listening to this or consuming this, that it could be vastly different. So I don't know that that's the direction I want to go in. It may be best to talk about some of the things that are evergreen, that will kind of be foundational principles that will hopefully get everyone through the next few weeks or months or however long it takes. So what are you kind of telling student athletes right now from a physical health perspective on what they can be doing to take care of themselves? Because we were talking about this before, and it seems like the perception has been that this is affecting older people, and that there's a perception among young people. I just saw a Twitter video where these people were on spring break and they were saying, look, I'm young and healthy. If I get it, I get it. That's a mentality to me as a non-medical expert that seems very dangerous. how are you trying to communicate to student athletes right now, just not just the urgency of it, but the protections they can take?
Well, so it has talking to some physicians this morning, it sounds like it's morphed in some ways. So they're seeing a younger population entering the hospitals right now with signs and symptoms. And so I think the initial thing was that if you are in any way immune compromised, if you've got, you know, a heart disease, if you've got diabetes, if you've got emphysema, you know, lung issues of some sort, asthma, that sort of thing, that you are definitely in a tricky spot in terms of the management of the speed at which the disease, or sorry, the virus would maybe have its effect on you. And so I've got an older mother. And so when I heard about the issue with the age, I became keenly aware of the fact that my interactions with her would have to change. Mm-hmm. Because if I believed myself to be a healthy young person, but I can carry this viral load and I can give it to her, you know, what a travesty that would be, you know, mm-hmm. to have that type of scenario. So I understood that that was the scenario that we were initially dealing with, was really, how do you, you know, flatten out that curve and slow down the rate at which people end up in the hospital. The only way you can really do that is by minimizing the viral load that's being spread. And that's a job for the younger people, right? That seems to have changed. So as the virus itself continues to change in ways that we can't anticipate or control, it seems to be affecting a greater number of people now in a lower age bracket. And that's the concern. And these are the people that are often on our front lines. These are our physicians now who are starting to see some of the effects of the illness. And, you know, there's not a whole lot in terms of backups to the doctors. Once the doctors and nurses go down, you know, we're going to be in a little bit different scenario. So, so my first message was to basically, you know, try to kind of, heed all the warnings, even though you don't see them, you don't feel them. They're real, you know, these viruses are a real thing. And I think that we did that pretty early on, but you know, when you start to think about frequent touch points like doorknobs and elevators and your cell phone and the remote control, it really, really gets hard to minimize touch points.
Yeah.
And so really, you know, going to that home work from, you know, work remotely model, I think is really one of the only things we can do to actually, you know, protect the people around us and ourselves. I can relay a little bit of what we've done,
okay,
maybe from the dining hall standpoint as well with student athletes, because okay, our obviously our goal is to be able to provide them shelter and food to the same level that we were providing, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Again, this information will change. We're talking at 1:50 on Thursday. Gosh, I'm having trouble even keeping up with the days. We're talking at 1:50 on Thursday. How many student athletes are still on campus, and how are you sort of trying to still take care of them and maintain as much of the services that y'all normally provide, the food, the shelter, the training room, and how are you kind of balancing that with all of the things that we're all dealing with, the social distancing and the self-quarantining? How are you trying to maintain service for whatever athletes or student athletes are still on campus and then still protect them and keep them safe?
Yeah. So I guess I could start kind of in being able to kind of see where we were headed with this. I'd say first our strength conditioning department just stepped up to the plate and started working really, really hard on providing, you know, written programming that the student athletes can take home, videotaping their own workouts so that they can be able to have those remotely so that they can, you know, use them at the sites that they're going to be at. And then providing every other means except for, you know, the dumbbells, the bench press, because presumably if you go back home, you may not have access to that. Your high schools are closing, your gyms are closing, your health centers are closing. And so how do you provide a workout that is meant to be, you know, something to power a, you know, elite athlete in every sport that we've got without the use of these machines and stuff? So all the strength coaches basically were kind of tasked with coming up with their own workouts that are going to be appropriate for the sport that they're covering, and for the environment that they're going to be asking their student athletes to work out of, which was really the unknown. And so they really rose to the occasion. I just couldn't be prouder of them. That was really in the first few days. From a medical standpoint, we had to first kind of figure out who was essential, who was unessential. So all of our student workers are gone. That goes across the board. That's the campus, you know, in our admin building here, the student workers essentially have been sent home. So you're down 40 in the athletic training world, you're down 44 really very helpful people mm-hmm. who do a lot of the work for us. So those students are gone. Figuring out if graduate assistants and interns are going to be vital to our workforce, or do we need to pare down to just the staff? The next thing I kind of looked at was who is our staff, who has babies, who has children, who needs to be home, who's better off being home, who's maybe compromised from illness, that sort of thing. We basically have enough work with our documentations and dealing with the student athletes remotely where everyone could be working from home for the most part. Mm-hmm. So we basically had this athletic training staff who doesn't need to be here, they're home. I've got no expectations of them, especially if they've got their kids. Athletic trainers by nature are going to get the work done, whether it happens at night or not. So we then came up with a plan to have our athletic training room staffed. So we consolidated initially both the weight room and athletic training room. So the main facility is Broussard athletic training facility, and the stadium closed down, the North Stadium weight room closed down. Everything was working out of football operations. And that way we had better controls over the frequency of cleaning, the ability to isolate people better over here and the number of spaces we have. And we came up then with the staff, you know, who's our critical staff? How do we rotate these people to keep them fresh and healthy? How are we establishing health amongst our own staff and keeping our facility kind of up and running? So that's in the works. We actually just today got our telemedicine program up and running, which I think is going to be incredible. So essentially our student athletes who are, you know, potentially even overseas, if they've got access to this platform, which we think they will, they'll be able to call in to our team physicians just as if they were sitting in the waiting room upstairs at Broussard waiting for an appointment. Mm-hmm. Doctor will let them in to the virtual room and evaluate them. And we can use e-prescriptions, and we can use some other avenues that we have to be able to get them the support they need. Because our concern is that we're sending them home, and home's not always a place where they can get the best care. Mm-hmm. Even in the best of circumstances. So in what presumably could be the worst of circumstances, where the hospitals are overrun, your clinics might close if there's not enough people to staff them, you know, what are people to do when they have legitimate medical concerns? You don't just have to have COVID to have a legitimate need for medical care. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that we can provide that service. And we think we've got that ironed out as of today, which just thrills me. Another area is the dining hall. So the Performance Dining Center is the hub for you know, every piece of caloric intake that student athletes have. And so after we closed down our satellite fueling stations, because it was just a risk to have all these different areas open, we focused on just, again, the football operations building where the dining center is. Pretty quickly on, we modified the way of the layout of the food. So we wanted less touch points. We wanted less people using handheld tongs to pick up food themselves and focus more on the delivery from behind the table. And that every single day and honestly, every single meal, we had new implementation, new things going into place that we had mm-hmm. to implement just by watching people. So it was important for our dining hall folks, their staff watching how student athletes use the facility to determine which things were safe and not safe. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to the point now, you know, in the last few days where the soda machines, the fountain machines are not safe. You're using two hands to take cups off. You're touching things. We need to go to bottles. We need to go, you know, to that. We had to move the salad bar away from the student athletes where they can make their own, because you've got too many hands in the pot, yeah. Basically. So we've just really kind of changed the way we're serving at this point. Ahead of the game to know that at some point it's going to get down to where we're at boxed meals where there's not a lot of choice. So right now we've modified the choices just a little bit, trying to simplify, you know, the way at which it's laid out. And we're serving, at this point, the numbers I got yesterday were 32 people for dinner. And that's down from about 42 to 45 from the day before. Day before that, we were at 100. So at that point, we still had student athletes that were here. We were still, you know, hoping and praying for the possibility that we can continue with our spring sports in certain sports, not necessarily all of them. At that point, gymnastics had been canceled. But we were unsure really about a lot of other sports and mm-hmm. what we could potentially come back to. So a lot of those student athletes did stick around. But really, as everything continued to roll downhill, we realized that it just wasn't going to be feasible to keep everybody here and keep them safe. My initial message to football at practice last week, coach let me talk to the team, and I really did want to keep them here. I felt that there was something inherently safe about keeping them contained here and not home with maybe their parents, their aunts, their grandparents who potentially have a lot of, you know, sickness and a lot of illness. Mm-hmm. I think that's a reality. But as things started closing, as businesses started closing and food started closing and the campus dining services closed down, it really started kind of becoming obvious that supporting them in the way that we want to be able to do it, that was going to be safest, was going to be compromised. So we've got, you know, roughly we're thinking probably about 70 or so student athletes, maybe 30 of which are on campus and, you know, 40 plus are off campus.
So one thing that keeps popping in my mind as you're talking is I'm just trying to put myself in the student athlete shoes because I have been a student athlete before. I remember I was at Nicholls State when Gustav hit in 2008, and that shut things down locally for a week or two, and so there were some adjusting there. But I remember even then battling mental health problems just for the 2 weeks you're away. You go home, you're uncertain about your future. This is that, but scaled up exponentially for a student athlete and their mental health burden. What are the challenges that y'all are facing in terms of, you know, not just the anxiety that comes with feeling cooped up and the anxiety that comes with the shock of the change in your routine, but also there's a lot of student athletes who don't know when their next game is going to be, when their next practice is going to be, if they're going to put on the jersey again. And I can't imagine the anxiety that's creating. So how are y'all addressing those challenges and helping student athletes work through those things?
Yeah. So again, another department that I oversee is the mental health area. So the sports psychology and counseling department I've got has three full-time people and one intern. And they obviously recognize the gravity of what's gone on. I mean, they themselves go through it. They're part of our team. And so it's a loss to them as well. As a matter of fact, one of them was on the road with basketball and was part of the whole transition, which I think, you know, in hindsight, it's a great thing. Those people are embedded in programs like that. They're there on the front lines. They can help them in ways that we couldn't really anticipate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there for the initial shock, to have a licensed professional counselor and social worker there, just a tremendous asset. So the first thing with those people that we wanted to kind of think about was how do we even transition the caseload that they have now? So they had to go into a virtual model as well. We've got a lot of student athletes that even at their elite levels still need support. Mm-hmm. That's without this transition of your loss of sport. So, first and foremost was to manage those cases that we had. That's kind of our duty of care, is to make sure that everyone is safe again. So, establishing, you know, ways that they can reach out to their student athletes, way that they can maintain their appointments that they've got on a regular basis. I think the most important thing, that they can do is to keep people on a regular, routine. And that's one of the things we've kind of focused on. Of course, it's easy when you're doing those types of jobs, right? Because you're just talking about scheduling another appointment and then assuming everyone can show up for those appointment times, it'll work out fine. But we're also sending them home, and now they're potentially caregivers to their younger brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. You know, we're asking them to do homework. We're asking them to maybe check in with their coaches. We're asking them to continue to maintain their mental health work with the counselors while they're trying to, you know, babysit. Mm-hmm. And so it's just an enormous amount of strain. And so we wanted to take care of those people first. I think secondarily, in the newsletters we've been sending out, I have provided their names and numbers to our population, because for some people that would have been able to have an easier time getting through stress just because of the nature of them being on campus and being in a routine, going home can throw them for a loop, right? So they can really struggle all of a sudden and not even know what they're feeling, because they're not, it's maybe something they're not even used to. And so we really wanted to spend the time trying to kind of keep the student athletes engaged and understanding what anxiety could feel like. So it's not just performance anxiety. It could also look like this in this scenario. And it could, you know, your sleeping patterns can create all kinds of monsters also in your head. You know, this is what that might look like. And if you're having these problems, you know, to reach out to not only your athletic trainer, maybe for that referral, because they might have that bond with the athletic trainer or the coach for that matter. But here are some numbers. Here are the people that know you best that can work through this stuff with you, and to make sure that they knew that those things were still available, even though they were not in town. I think it's just, again, an amazing thing that we can do with technology. It's everything that we were talking about bad about social media 1 month ago. We're praising right now that we've got it, because it would be a really difficult time period for everyone if we had no way to even communicate.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I was mentioning Gustav in 2008, 12 years ago, and even then there wasn't this much technology and ability to maintain communication. So that's certainly an asset. And one asset you mentioned earlier was the Healthy Tiger newsletter that you've been sending out. And I've been reading them every time I get them, and just kind of scouring them for any information that I can apply. How are you putting those together? What's kind of on your radar for, I'm sure you're working on the next one. What's sort of on your radar for the next one? And you mentioned the challenge of trying to stay current, but what's sort of the objective with those when you're sending them out, and what's on your radar for the next couple?
Yeah. Anyone who knows me knows I kind of work from the heart. And so if I'm feeling a particular way that day, the newsletter might go that direction. Mm-hmm. The way they're going out is through this ARM system. And so I'm able to kind of write a little paragraph in addition to the letter. And I think people can probably figure out what's going on in my own head and my own heart in those short paragraphs. I have to believe that I'm not that different from you know, everyone else that's around here. I might just actually verbalize it more than other people. And so I think I give voice to the people who maybe don't know what they're feeling and what they're, you know, how to say it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of put it out there, and then, you know, allow them time then to click into this newsletter. So the newsletters have been, I think tonight will be volume 8, which means mm-hmm. literally we've been into this 8 days, not counting the weekends. I needed to unwind for the weekend for sure. But I'm really hitting on everything that I think is important, that's factual, that is, you know, not fear-based. And I'm really having to work hard through a lot of the stuff that's out there to find what's most important for what I think not only my student athletes want to see and read, but what my staff, it's going out to a large number of staff people as well. So I'm trying to kind of engage both groups, which is difficult, but at the end of the day, we're all human. And so I think at the end of the day, we're all kind of feeling the same thing, maybe expressing it in different ways. But, you know, I've got a FAQ section that, you know, goes in and out of issues that maybe are going to be eligibility issues. I've had questions about, am I going to get my scholarship? So a lot of really, you know, questions that are kind of central to student athletes being to, you know, to something that's, more related to mental health, you know, and ways to manage stress. There was great articles I've come across online that I thought were important for the coaches to read. So I think in last night's letter was if you work in athletics and you read this article, it's going to bring you home pretty quick, because it just talked about how this has been such a crushing moment for not just the student athletes, but for everyone else that works with these student athletes too. And so it's easy for us to kind of get caught up in just supporting the student athletes. That is my main goal, but everyone really needs a moment to be able to kind of reflect on themselves. And I felt like I would be doing a disservice if I just was addressing student athletes, because I really just think at this age that they're at, between 18 and 22, I mean, they're for the most part adults, and they can relate to all these emotions that even the other people are feeling too.
Shelley, I can't thank you enough for your time. I just want to get out on this note. We talked about so many of the resources that you're providing for student athletes. where would, if, you know, if a student athlete's listening, or even if just a fan of LSU is listening and they're looking for answers to questions, where are the resources that you would point them toward?
Well, I have found National Institute of Mental Health. So NIMH has been really helpful with factual data and ways to actually manage stress and anxiety, that sort of thing. Obviously, the CDC has been a tremendous asset. The World Health Organization, WHO, these are all really factual data. Louisiana State Department of Health has a really good website that I think for those of us that are in Louisiana, I think can kind of focus on. Those are really the main ones. I mean, I think there are a lot of good avenues out there, but it has to be science-based. You really have to kind of put the politics away for the moment and just listen to the scientists and you know, heed warnings and really focus on what's right for humanity, not just for, you know, for yourself.
Absolutely. Well, Shelly, I can't thank you enough for this conversation and just the work that you're doing in general. I don't remember which one it was, but one of the ones you sent out, I think in the paragraph that you wrote, suggested taking your dog on a walk. And so I was sitting here with my Australian Shepherd sitting right next to me right now. He's napped and he's behaved a little bit better than my daughter. He hasn't made any noise during the recording, but taking him on a walk every day, and it just kind of helps clear your head. And the other thing that I took from that was the way that you signed off, I think on the last one, was in this for the long haul. And so I think it is going to be a long haul, hopefully not too long, but it's good to know that we're kind of all in this together. And hopefully, you know, if we work together, we can get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to stick together.
All right, Shelly, thank you so much.
All right, have a good one. Like nights of old, we fight to hold the glory of the purple and gold. Come on, you Tigers. I said fight, fight, fight. Victory for, victory for, victory for. Victory for